Accession number 18560, Reel 8.
He's a farmer brother. The fifth Black Watch don't seem to be able to clear him now that they're pushed. I said, "What do you want?" He said, "Could I take a 1500 weight truck?" He's in a stretcher and ground sheet. I said, "Yes, I'll go with you." So Happy Vanette and I, we drove up to where the fifth Black Watch were. And I've never seen anything like it. The bodies that were laid there, they'd been run over by tanks. Right?
Yes.
I'd seen this before, but never on such a scale. I said to Jim, I says, "How do you know your brother?" He says, "Well, all I could find was his ID disc on this body." So he said, "It must be the brother." Well, I said, "If it was the ID disc," I says, "that's it." So we picked up what we could of him, put him in the ground sheet, and then on the stretcher and took him back to our battalion. We got our padre to take him to, I think the name of the place was Demoville. I can't remember the exact name. It began with a D, to bury the chap in the various areas that had been allocated. And that was it. That was a disaster. It was Colin Bells. And we blamed the British soldier. That's one thing I can say about the British soldier. Can blame the persons who he thinks who weren't doing the bloody job right or weren't doing the planning right. And I do, if I remember, his name was General Crocker, who had come to the command of our division at the time because we had lost our div commander. And he formed this composite brigade. And as you know, a brigade can work together. The first Black Watch, the first Black Watch, the 7th Argyles, and the 7th Black Watch, we all work together like a team in action. But that was broken once the brigade was broken up. Each battalion, a battalion from every other two brigades. We never worked together before, only as brigades. And that's where I think it went wrong. I may be wrong, because that's what the powers that be above us thought. Anyway, it must have been right, because we didn't have General Crocker long before he was replaced by somebody else. And from there we carried on various places. I remember one place called Cagney. We took over from the Brigade of Guards, Foot Guards. Well, it was Guards Armour Brigade, but it was the foot soldiers that were there, because they did all travel in tanks. And when we took over, I've never seen anything. The positions, they were sighted well for the ground. They covered the ground. But the slip trenches were only about a foot and 18 inches deep. I couldn't understand that, because you had to dig down, get your shoulders below and your head below the ground, and you stood on your feet. That was for safety, but just most senses, a dig like hell. Unfortunately, whilst we were digging, when we got there, it was silent, everything was quiet. But the The guard, the enemy had seen the guards moving out, us moving in, and it was taken in day, full daylight. We changed in full daylight. When he started giving us heavy stunks. And I lost one or two men out of the platoon. Not severely. They were just injured. Shrapnel was the main thing. Little McGee, he was a chap that joined us as reinforcement from the 1st Blackwatch, from the 1st King's Own Scottish Borderers. Bloody good lad. He was a carrier driver. We had to leave there and be pulled out there, out from Cagney. I was on the motorbike and I caught some travelling out through some bushes. And in rushing through the bushes, I didn't know until I got down on this bit of a straight road. I'd lost my map case. And the map case was all marked out with battalion positions and everything. I thought, oh, bloody hell. If I leave that, then it's caught. Enemy attacker captured the where positions and everything. So I decided to go back for it. I got the friend of my life. I just passed a wood, a big wood, on my right. And I thought, well, I'll fasten this map case onto my body securely. Stood the bike against a wall down the side of this country lane. When about 30 bloody aircraft came over. And they were swooping down, but fortunately I realised then they were behind me. And I looked up and thought, oh, well, thank God, the British. And that was the first time I'd ever seen typhoons in action. And they were firing these rockets at the enemy tanks in the wood. God, what a surprise I got. But initially, when they came, I laid down by that wall. I thought, bloody hell, they're firing at me. Then I realised it. Regained my senses, looked up. And the area where they were firing, I thought, I'm all right. So I jumped on the motorbike and I made that bugger go as fast as it could. And then the next thing we had in action was the clearance of Corn, the attack from Corn. I forget the date of that, but it was a massive job. But it was all done at night. And the whole army moved at once, more or less. We went in, but we were all transported in that night when we left Corn. The actual breakout. The whole of the assault troops were on armoured vehicles and in Ringo carriers at the front. And the idea was all together in one mass, just move forward over the ground and keep going. Don't stop. Just drive right through the enemy. So we drove right through over the fields and through the woods, scrubbery, and they were round about. We were told not to engage the enemy underhand or by weapons. The only thing was we, as a carrier platoons, were on the flanks, protecting the tanks from any infantry. We could shoot. We had to shoot the infantry, of course, to take it from getting near the tanks with the hand grenades or anything like that. We fought through the night, and as dawn was breaking, we were on our objectives, and they went without a fault. And the follow-up was masses and masses of aircraft, bombers, were over our heads. And then When we consolidated, I think our objective was Garcelles. I'm certain that we lost quite a good men, quite a lot of good men and officers at Garcelles. And then the aircraft flew over. And it was an advance of the Polish Armoured Division that was going to pass through us and carry on the attack. And the bombers were going over to pound the land in front of the Polish Armoured Division. And that was a grand sight to see the masses of bombs coming down, carpets of them. The whole ground shaking. We were miles behind at that time from the bomb, where the bombs were dropping. You could hardly stand for the vibration through the ground. We're picking the wounded up there, I picked a number of wounded up, drivers and whatnot. I got them on the carrier. I thought, well, I better get these chaps back to the advanced dressing station. Which I knew where it was, at a big building, Cormel's, I think they called it, Cormel's, to go there. Anyway, while I'm driving back, over ground, we travel over through the night. I was driving just into the big building, into the area of this building, between the wall and the big gates, between the wall, when a squadron of, I assume it was a squadron, of American B-52s came over. But what amazed me was they were flying from inland. So anybody coming over, Americans would think they'd be coming from, they'd be flying inland, not from the centre inland. Well, just outside the barracks was a whole Canadian gun line of Long Toms, what we used to call Long Toms. They were firing away, giving support to the advancing troops ahead. When I noticed from the lead bomber, bombers dropping. And from then, every bomber released his bombs. And it dropped right on the gun line. At the same time, a whole Canadian division was coming forward on the road. Outside this big barracks where the dressing stations were. And they were hit by them. Now then, something was wrong there, and you've never heard of it. It's never been explained. Never. Never been publicised like some things. That whatever happened to that Canadian division had lots and lots of casualties, they must have had, and the gun line. But one of the planes came down. It was hit by AirCAC fire, and a Spitfire travelled underneath them, so the bombers could see it, and that was his only way of trying to stop them dropping the bombs. And the Canadian, what was left of the Canadian gun line, the gunners, I know they grabbed hold of the American crews. What happened to them, I don't know. It's not for me to say. But that was wrong. And that's one thing that was never explained to us as to why. We know mistakes can be made. But what I thought was, why should they come back from inland, from out over enemy territory, and bomb us. They were on the between the sea and the inland. Why that happened, I don't know. But anyway, all overcome. It was one of those things of war. You've got to put up with it. I in the carrier, going through, the bomb dropped behind us. I remember the carrier lifted up from the back end and it went on its nose and dispose of the casualties I had. The carrier was all right. I saw my casualties that I'd taken in were all carried away. They're all right. And then I went back to the battalion at Gassels. And from there, we just carried on the push up towards Saint-Sylvain and Saint-Pierre. I don't know whether we'd pass Saint-Pierre on the road, but the colonel was travelling in the carrier with me, and driving up, and it came under fire. The whole battalion, not only us, the battalion came under fire. On the woods, on the right-hand side of the road, it was fairly hilly there on the right, sloping down to the left on the road. And it got into evening time, it was dusk, very dusk. Dusk was falling, or night time was falling. And the colonel says, I want you to dismount your carriers. I said, yes, sir. He said, B Company are going up the right-hand side of the road. I want you to do flank protection on the right, which I couldn't understand that, because most of the enemy were on the right, you see. And we set off. But what I couldn't understand, but he said, take your shovels and your picks with you and all your weapons. And I said, well, sir, I said, they're moving through close contrasts. The hell of a weight we're all carrying. I said, I don't know how the hell we're going to do it. Well, he said, do what you can, he said, because I don't suppose you'll have to move far. I said, if you come under fire again, he said, then you'll have to dig in. Oh, I said, I understand now, sir. So we took up positions. And the right-hand platoon, a B Company, should have been in contact with us. We were more heavily weighted down by equipment that we couldn't keep contact with them, you see. So they had to have the infantryman there, or whoever was detailed to do so, was keep contact with us. But with no information from setting off, with no information at all from B Company, from that platoon, right-hand platoon or contact man, we just kept walking in single file. We're holding each other's bayonets or a white strip that we had in our packs down the back, you see. Tied this white strip, white tape, so the man behind could see us. We could all keep in line. And it really difficult, he grabbed all the bayonets covered. I don't know that. We went a good distance. I don't know how far we went. But we came across this building, and it was occupied by French people. Well, I couldn't speak French, but I did have a chap called Corporal Lawton, who spoke very fluent French. He was a reporter in civilian life. So I said, go there, Derek. I said, speak to them, ask them if they know where the Germans are, how many Germans is around here, or anywhere the positions are. He came back, he says, the position, and none round here. But he said, the roadway's just down there, on your left. So he says, there are some down there, but he says, I don't know where. So with that, I made a detour and turned left. All followed behind. And the ground still rising. I could just make out the track, the small road. And of course, we were silent by then. We stood still. And I saw two figures walking by. And they had coal scuttle helmets on. So I said, just then, we heard our chaps shouting, help, help. And then there were bursts of machine gun fire. Well, you could tell the German machine guns the different sound of our guns. We knew immediately the Germans were there. We called on our chaps to come forward, then we'll help you. These chaps shout, all right. The next thing, He opened up on them. Well, I had ten submachine guns, Ren guns, 10 crews lined up behind me. I said, take cover. Well, I didn't speak. Every man, the man next to me saw my signal down and it carried on, you see. They all got down. I said, when I open up on these two bastards down here, I said, then start firing in the direction of where the enemy fire's coming from. Every one of you, open up as fast as you can and just keep going. Which we did. Anyway, the jerry must have got near us. Because all we got was no... We heard no bullets flying past us. But we were hit by a deluge of hand grenades. Two or three of my chaps were wounded. Fortunately, all in the backside. Call little Jackson. He's an oldish chap. Came from Fife. He says, do you know, he says, that bastard that's wounded me, I can't see him. But I've got, my arse is bleeding. Then another bloke shot, my wound is, I'm shot in the arse. And about three or four blokes, wound in the arse. And it's rather strange because I was stood up and I never felt the bloody thing. Anyway, the two officers came up. And Mr. Ross and Mr. Mr. Ross.
Might come to you later.
I was going to, it sounded like his name sound. The other chap sounded, Blinko, or Blanco, how was he, if he couldn't remember his name, say Blanco. Mr. Blinko, I think that was his name. He said, what's wrong, I said, not for Christ's sake, I said, you're the bloody back there waiting on, Mr. Blinko was from B Company. This Lieutenant Ross was my platoon, well, he was one of my platoon officers. I said, where the hell you've been until now, I don't know. He says, we've been following behind. I said, now you come up. I said, well, look, we're going to make our way back. I said, everything's dead down now. We can't hear our bloke shouting, help, so let's get back. We went back and joined the battalion. I reported to the CO what had happened. He says, right, you know the ground. Oh, I thought, bloody hell, he's sending us out again. He says, you know the ground. He says, I want you to go over it again, join the road where, when you come to the place where you fired from, join the road there, he says, and then carry through ahead. See if you can find out where the enemy are. So I said, right, I'll take Corporal Lawton with me. I called Lawton, was a man you could really, really rely on. A steadfast person, never faltered, never showed fear. In fact, he took it as a bloody big joke. He says, come on then. So off we went, up the road so far, in the wood so far, dark on the road again so far. And we came until we ran out of wood, the far end of the wood. And all we could see ahead of us was the rising ground, a big hill. On the right was a farmhouse, about 500 yards away. We hadn't seen any enemy at all. Mind you, you've got to assume that the enemy is just as wily as you are. There's only two of us. And we were taught the same way. If you only see a couple of enemy, don't fire at them. You give your positions away. So get back, report what you can report, and that's it. So we went back reporting. The ground, as far as we've seen, sir, is clear, but we can't be assured of that. I said, there's only two of us. And I said, if the enemy's in numbers, a greater number than what we are, I says, well, he'll lay low until he sees a massive infantry advancing. Having reported to him He said, right, we'll advance again. So I advanced again. I was walking this time. I left the carry behind. They were coming up in the rear. They're walking up. We joined the companies then. I think it was 11th Platoon of B Company that were on our right in the wood. And the first thing I saw was five of our chaps, that was more or less a whole section, lying behind one another in the field. And me, like a bloody fool, I ran forward. I thought, well, I'll go and get, I'll look safe and all right. I was just bending down over the first body when a bloody machine gun opened up on me. But fortunately, he hadn't sighted right. And they went, the ground was being puffed about around me. So I just turned and ran back like bloody. God, I ran back. So I said, have you got any 2-inch mortars there? He said, yes. Well, I says, for Christ's sake, I says, get a position of where that machine gun's coming from. I says, get your 2-inch mortars ranged on them right now. Where's battalion headquarters? Across the other side of the road. So I went and joined them. And I saw Captain Riach. He says, now then, Sam, what are you running about for? I says, the enemy's in the farmhouse there on the right in front of it. In the front of the farmhouse and on the right of the farmhouse facing us. I said, I don't know how many there are, but he says, there's a machine gun just opened up. I said, no, he just bloody opened up on me. But I says, fortunately, he didn't hit me. And the seven men laid out in front, in a field, all dead. I says, the only thing, sir, I says, is you've got some tanks here. And the Derbyshire Yeomanry. I said, if you let me get in our tank, I can use their machine gun, because they carried lots of incendiary bullets, which when the flame through there are red. He says, I see what you mean. He said, I'll have to see their squadron commander. So I says, that's it then. Anyway, gets in the tank. I said, pull over. In the road, and we started to go across this field where the men were laid dead. And I fired the machine gun from the left of the house as I saw it, expecting the enemy to strung out on the right. And I split the whole lot to in front of the farmhouse as well with incendiary bullets. And in order to let the gunner in the tank use HE on them. So where my bullets were falling, he couldn't fire all, but he dropped his shells here and there, explosives. It was then that I noticed from the back of the farmhouse a Schutz Panzerwagen. It was a 3/4 track vehicle, stayed by the front wheels of a vehicle, 3/4 tracks at the back, all enclosed. It used to carry, a Schutz Panzerwagen used to carry a group of machine gunners and machine guns. What number, I don't know, well, the numbers would vary. From behind the farmhouse, there must have been a road he was driving on. He drove towards the road, on the road, down to it, looked at my map, it was a crossroads. And the way that they went, they got away with it. At the same time that I saw this happening, a load of people, about 15 to 20, mainly children and women, with one or two old men, came converging from the house and came towards us.